Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help.
Hello and welcome to Real Recovery. Bill and George, Matt at the board. We're having a great night. I hope your weekend has been good. It's Sunday night and it's time for another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. George, we've got Chip Dodd coming on the program, our real-time author. How about that?
Nice. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, he wrote a book with his co-author, Stephen James, called Hope in the Age of Addiction, How to Find Freedom and Restore Your Relationships. Huh. Think that's an issue?
I hope we have time for him.
Well, let's get started. I know we talk about steps on the show. I think we're going to talk about step 12 tonight.
We are.
So remind me again what step 12 is, and then how about a little devotional on it?
Every year as I get older, going with the steps off the top of my head gets hard, but I can't see anymore, so I wouldn't be able to read it. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we carried the message to other alcoholics and people who suffered, I added that, and practiced these principles in all our affairs. The reason I wanted to talk about this, Bill, with you is that we talk a lot on this show that God doesn't save us from our addictions and our problems without having a job for us to do. And
purpose, isn't it?
Well, it's unbelievable. Number one, it's a miracle anytime we get sober and saved. It just is. But to have the fact that the creator of the universe wants us to represent him to other people suffering from the same thing is beyond my comprehension, Bill. It's right there with, like, where was I before I was born? Or how big is heaven? And how long is eternity? I just can't do that. But it's true, and who can better share the gospel and the love, forgiveness, mercy, and grace of Jesus Christ than somebody who's experienced it themselves? And you can tell when you're in recovery if somebody else is. They tell you something and you go, you wouldn't know that otherwise. And the encouragement here, if you're a Christian and you're listening to the show, and if you're not, I hope you look at that and pray about it and consider it. Because that's the main thing we're talking about here is forgiveness of sins, eternal life, is that you have a job to do. And if you became a Christian, you should be in recovery from your old lifestyle. It doesn't have to be alcoholism, drug addiction. If you're a Christian and you're born again, your life should be different than it was before. And you have a job to carry that message to people that are still suffering without the Lord. And maybe if you're a little dry in your walk with the Lord, maybe if your recovery's getting boring, one of our friends, Glenn R., always says when guys go back to drinking after sobriety, how many people were you working with? And the answer is always zero. We're selfish, self-seeking people. I know I am. I get up in the morning, and what am I going to do today for me, right? Me.
Yeah.
And what we are looking at with this step is practicing these principles in all our affairs, our whole life, not just on Sundays, not just in my Bible study, but in all your relations with people at work, on the freeway, at home. And that's a tall order, Bill. It really is. It's real easy to be a super good Christian in church before COVID. I can really do it at home watching TV.
I bet you could.
But driving on the freeway, not a strong suit for me. I got to reel that back in. But that's what we're looking at. And this came to me because the guy that really helped me, Dan Knutson, who was with Campus Crusade, called me this week. And I reflected back that he never gave up on me, even though I relapsed many times. And I wanted to tell him that you helped change my life. And I know that really encouraged him. But you know what? He really encouraged me, Bill. And when people mess up, they know they messed up. And we offer hope. And there's hope in only one name, and that's Jesus. So practicing that in all your affairs should be paramount for you.
Mm-hmm. George, when we have narratives, past old narratives in your head that will keep you blind to addiction. I know Chip has talked about that in his book a little bit. But things like and maybe you as a listener have said this, if your life was as hard as mine, you would drink too or use too, right? Or the only time I get a break from stress is when I fill in that blank.
It works. And we can talk about denial that I don't have a problem. I always feel it's closely linked with, I know I like this too much and I think I do have a problem, but I don't want to give this up. The denial really is also, and maybe foremost, that I don't want to live without this. That this is the only thing that I look forward to. This keeps me. And when you give up, there's a grieving process. And I think Chip talks about that in his book, too.
We'll ask him about it tonight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it's like breaking up with your best girlfriend or your lover or whatever. It's your best friend and it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
All in oats.
Right, right. And maybe the narrative in your head is, well, I'm just having a good time. And everybody wants to have that good time, right, George?
Well, I was like Tony the Tiger. I had a great time. there's nothing. And it works for a while.
Yeah.
The deception of Satan is these things work for a while. It goes back to Genesis. Did God really say that? Come on, he didn't. That's, you know, you could, come on, twist your arm, Bill, have a drink. And the next thing you know, hey, one or two beers isn't a bad deal. So four or eight's going to be even better. And then it's got you.
Mm-hmm. But, George, as we are now in this unprecedented time, I hate using that word. I told myself
pretty
I wouldn't
big word.
Use it.
Yeah.
Even for me.
Yeah.
But it gets used a lot. But I don't remember in my lifetime or yours anything like what we're going through in COVID-19.
Thank you.
I know. That was a good slam.
Yeah.
But anything what we've been going through, and it does ratchet up the stress in people's lives. They're looking for escape. They're looking for relief. You need to know you come to the throne room of heaven for that comfort, for that peace, for that joy. You're not going to find it in a bottle or a pill.
Right. You're absolutely right. And I think for me, there's been a positive to the social distancing, Bill, that I can spend more time meditating and reflecting.
I think you're
not going to graduation parties and
right.
weddings and funerals and stuff I don't want to go to.
Right.
So that's been good.
Yeah. But there is a large percentage of the U.S. population right now that is in an active addiction. And the people that are involved with their lives are suffering consequences. So this is a big, big problem, and our guest tonight, Chip, we're going to bring him on in just a couple of minutes. His book is Hope in the Age of Addiction, and he's really going to help us encourage to find freedom and to restore relationships, because that's a problem. You're out of community, and you've got broken relationships, and you're looking for hope. And this is, I think, what's going to be a great hour ahead of us.
I think it'll be really good. I wonder if everybody's addicted to themselves before God. What do you think about that?
Well, I know you are, but
yeah.
I mean that in a good way.
I mean,
way.
How could I not be? Yeah, you mean that in a good way. Oh, that's loving and kind.
It is, isn't it?
No, it is.
Yeah, but
when I see you, I see Jesus.
Thank you, George.
Yeah, I do.
That's the nicest thing you've ever said to me, even if you don't mean it. All right, we're going to take a little break. Thank you for listening to Real Recovery, now in our ninth year, and we so appreciate when you tell a friend about the show. Maybe you know someone who's suffering with an addiction, and they would be blessed by hearing support like this and biblical hope and wisdom. We would love for you to steer people our direction. You can always go to myfaithradio.com and hear podcasts of old shows. They're all there. So we'll take a little break. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. When we come back, our special guest, Chip Dodd, will be on the program. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Every breath you take.
So glad to have Chip Dodd as our guest tonight. He's not only an author, but he's a consultant, a mentor, And he's worked in the field of recovery from addiction for 30 years, George. We've got a big big hitter on our hands tonight.
Looking forward to hearing this, Bill.
Yeah, indeed. He's written a book with his friend Stephen James, and the book is called Hope in the Age of Addiction, How to Find Freedom and Restore Your Relationships. This would be great. George, you're nodding. Remember, we're on radio.
You know, I was thinking about restoring my relationships and could always improve that.
Yeah.
Probably starts with restoring my relationship with God, I'm going to guess.
I'm guessing so. Well, Chip, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, George and Bill. I appreciate being on today.
Yeah, and if you can try to remember Bill and George just as far as the order, because it is kind of important.
Okay.
I'm going to give you a pass on that one, but going forward,
Bill,
please.
George.
There we go. That's
all
much
right.
Better.
Let's do it.
Well, congratulations on your book. I know that we're living right now in an age where I think alcohol, illegal drugs, prescription drugs, porn, gambling, eating disorders, it's got to be skyrocketing, especially because of what we're doing in our world right now with COVID.
Yeah.
And the population is, they're addicted to something. And it's taking massive tolls physically, emotionally, spiritually, financially. We got to do something about it. So this is why I'm very hopeful this hour is going to be pointing people in the right direction.
Absolutely. I'm really glad, you know, that those numbers that you just went through, just in 2020, the statistics show that 13% increase in opioid overdoses, death by opioid addiction. In 2020, and I'm sure that's connected to the pressures of COVID, physical, social isolation. We need to call it physical distancing instead of social distancing, but it's physical isolation. And I talked to an internist the other day. He told me that one out of every three patients who are coming to his office are coming for depression and anxiety directly related to COVID.
I'm not surprised. And then after that comes self-medication.
Absolutely. You know, the pharmaceutical world, when we do the numbers for the book, we can do the stats related to all the addictions you just named, which is 82 million people, Bill and George. And but we have no way to count the number of people who are addicted through health professionals. I mean, the pharmaceutical numbers are astounding. And yet we can't count them. So we're looking at just in terms of the big addictions that what we know to be addiction people think of. You're at 90 million people, before really coming out of the gate and looking in depth at this. So 90 million people.
Wow.
Addicted.
Big number.
Anything else in our world that had those kinds of numbers, the outrage would be unbelievable.
So true. So,
yeah.
Chip, I'm just curious about the increased number of pills that people have access to, whether it's opioids that are being prescribed by a doctor or things that they're using to self-medicate. I mean, the human experience is getting more and more around people taking pills.
Yeah. You know, the way I describe it so often is that we have begun to go find a pill to avoid the path. We search out a pill rather than the path. And we live more and more, especially in the past, I would say four decades, if not more, we have moved farther and farther into a society in which we declare ourselves as self-created and we'll do self-managed to get self-sufficiency. Instead of facing that we're God created and effective dependence is the way to live fully. So we have a society that will do almost anything to avoid the path of living life on life's terms and having to be in need. We will do anything not to feel. And advertising, watch advertising day in and day out. I mean, the number of pills, as you say, that are presented in marketing terms are astounding. With all those side effects given, but also the pills of wealth, the pill of safety, the pill of health, you know, the pill of prosperity, all these things are going to keep us from having to feel and be in need, which is what addiction is. It's avoidance of feelings, simply put.
Yeah. When Chip, you said living life on life's terms, that's a really great reminder of how important that is.
Yes. Yeah. We didn't create life. Our job is to be able to struggle well in it. And it turns out that addiction is a counterfeit expression of us trying to find the lives we're made to have. We're birthed, in neuroscientific terms, we're born wired for relationship. We are literally born looking for who is looking for us. We're literally born to find connection. Connection, relational connection, is fulfillment. And it turns out that, you know, just like the tares grow with the wheat, that addiction feels like connection. If you can't be connected how you're created, you'll find another way. So, yeah.
Well,
life on life's terms.
We always talk about on this show about finding community, and a lot of addicts and alcoholics have community with people that are using. And it might solve a lack of people connection. And then when you pop a pill, that's pretty easy. It's a lot easier than going out and drinking for a couple hours or smoking. Yeah. And what we're doing is we're changing how we feel, and it works, and it works very well. And then the people are hooked, right?
Yes. Yeah. And the, because we're wired for relationship, the brain in and of itself, just as an organ, is not moral. It seeks its own sense of being alive. It's like a DNA thing. DNA seeks life to the full. So the brain is created to find fulfillment through relationship with you know, your heart, with the heart of God and the hearts of others. But when we're growing up, if we're not raised to use our brains to express our hearts out of Scripture, if we're not able to live answering God's first question, which is, where are you, Genesis 3:9, and if we don't speak, you know, as a man thinketh in his heart, Proverbs 23:7, King James, that we're literally, if we don't use our brains to express our hearts and find fulfillment in community, relational community, because of where we're, how we're wired, we're going to find it another way. We're all created to belong and matter. So, I mean, and it's amazing. Like you said, pills are easier than relationship. And so if we're not raised to trust how God created us, then we will find a way to express a way to find fulfillment without having to be how we're created.
So that's so smart. Chip, talk about denial a little bit. Everyone suffers from denial. They don't live life on life's terms. So how does denial work into addiction?
Yeah, that's such a great question. You know, we talked about the 90 million a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. And if we had 90 million anything else going on in this country that was negative, if 90 million COVID, we would be at war with the universe.
Mm-hmm.
As 90 million people with some special form of cancer, we would be at war with the universe. But we have 90 million people who are addicted. And for every one person, that's a family, a heart, that's a life, that's impacting others and also being destroyed. And yet something's stopping us from seeing it and recognizing the impact of it. And that characteristic, that thing, is called denial. On a macro scale and on a micro scale, denial is what keeps us from seeing what's actually happening. And denial affects us, you know, individually, like I say, as societally. But denial means, and anyone who's been raised around addiction or anyone who's been raised to avoid how God made them, to use their brain, to use their frontal lobe, use their thinking brain to express their hearts, they're growing up in a world of denial, which means I belong and matter when I don't see what's actually happening. Because if I see the way the brain is created, you actually see after you feel. So there's a visual cortex is in the back of your brain, and light passes through your eyes and goes through a territory called the limbic system before it goes to the visual cortex. And the limbic system is your feeling center of your brain. So if you don't see, you won't feel. And if you don't feel, you won't have to see. And what that does to us, I don't feel, I don't see, so I won't feel. If I don't feel, I won't be in need. I won't be vulnerable. And if I'm not vulnerable and in need, I won't talk about what's actually happening inside of me. And if I don't talk about what's happening inside of me, I won't have to trust that somebody will care. So what's amazing is denial pulls us away from how God made us. and pulls us into isolation. And then all of a sudden we're literally living Jeremiah 17, 5 and 6. Isolated or cursed is the person who is in denial, who has to trust in their own flesh, depends upon their own strength, whose heart is removed from God. And denial literally removes us from how we're created and ultimately isolates us. And then once you're in denial, dissociation takes over. You literally react against being emotionally vulnerable. So those two things end up controlling our society. If it's true that we have 90 million people who are addicted, and for every one person who's addicted, three other people are detrimentally impacted. Well, three times 90 is 270 million people. So when you brought up denial, I mean, think about the power of this thing. I don't see, I don't feel, I don't need, I don't talk, and I don't trust. And the tragedy is that that denial is as powerful in the church as it is not, as it is in secular society, and it's scary.
I think you struck a chord with a lot of listeners with that, those key characteristics that really put us in a position for addiction. Because if you don't see, then you're not going to feel. And if you don't need and you don't speak and you don't trust, you are living on a sad island, aren't you?
Yes. Yes. Truly isolated. Mm. And we know so often, you guys are such, you know, biblical experts and so on, but you know, in the, you know, like the story of the bleeding woman in Mark, Book of Mark, she had been bleeding for 12 years, been in pain, removed from society, couldn't touch her grandchildren, couldn't be close to others because she was, you know, quarantined. And she snuck up and said, if I could just touch him, if I could just get close to him, then I will be healed. And she tried everything, and yet her hope wouldn't go away. So she continued to hope. And so she reached into the group that was pressing against Jesus and touched him, and Jesus stopped and said, okay, who touched me? And that whole crowd, it's kind of comedic in a way, but the whole crowd said, hey, Jesus, everybody's touching you. And that is the great delineation. Only she touched him with her heart. Only she touched him with her neediness. Only she touched him with her hurt and her wishes and her dreams and her longings. Everybody else was touching him for power, control, and dependence. And power, his power went out of him when she touched him with her presence. And I think that is the big loss. You know, when Jesus says, unless you come to me like a child, unless you change and become like one of these, you can't enter the kingdom of heaven. And so when we're growing up, our society demands that we lose how we're created in so many ways and go into denial. Mm-hmm. And yet our freedom comes from the presence of God and our hearts open to God's presence.
All right, Chip, we're going to—
That's our part.
Yeah.
That's our part, opening our hearts.
We're off to a fantastic start. Chip Dodd is our guest. His book is Hope in the Age of Addiction. You're listening to Real Recovery. We're just going to take a very short break, and we'll be right back.
I didn't do, but I continue learning.
Welcome back to the show. So glad to have Chip Dodd as our guest tonight. He co-authored a book with Stephen James, and it's called Hope in the Age of Addiction, How to Find Freedom and Restore Your Relationships. George, we're off to a good start.
Absolutely. You know, when I hear about denial, I just never think it's about me.
No, you don't.
And
yeah. So I would love, Chip, if you would, talk about some of the things that keep people blind to their addiction or blind to addiction.
Yeah. And Bill and George, again, thank you for having me on today, tonight. What keeps us blind to our addiction is that denial in and of itself, this is just one thing, but denial in and of itself literally means to be blind. It's not that I'm lying, and it's not that I'm pretending. It's literally that I literally don't see. And that's the wild part. We don't quite grasp that defenses are not forms of lying. They're forms of literally not seeing. So that's number one. And number two is denial truly covers up fear. And fear is a feeling that we've been given by God that allows us to recognize danger and ask for help. So when a person is in denial, addicted, that addictive process, whatever it is, keeps them from having to feel and keeps them from having to be in need. And because we all need to belong and matter, wired for relationship, this person's brain has literally found the answer to belonging and mattering without pain. So the brain, it's like a drowning person. You know, you swim out to save a drowning person, that drowning person will try to drown you. The brain is locked in like a survival animal that it will do anything to stay alive. So denial supports the person staying alive. And because the purpose of a person's life once they're addicted is I'll do anything not to feel. Whatever I've got to do not to feel, I'm going to do. And so literally isolation takes over, and the thought of coming out of isolation is terrifying. Because what's wild is that the great danger for the recovering addict, the great danger for this person is because of trauma, past harms, being raised in ignorance, terrified that if they're not performing, they won't be worth anything, that people are terrified of feelings. And I've written a book called The Voice of the Heart. And what it declares is that God has given us eight feelings, eight tools that let us live fully in a tragic place, right out of the Psalms. But feelings to the addict brain are so terrifying that we're sure they'll kill us. And I want your listeners to know that what feelings do, two terrible things are going to happen if you feel, and they're not terrible. Number one, you're going to come back to life. You're just going to have a sense of being alive. You're going to feel. You're going to get to feel glad. You're going to get to feel sad. You're going to get to feel hurt. And all of those take us to healing and acceptance and joy. And you're going to remember your life. And remember means to come back together. We remember. So feelings, quite the opposite of being sin or even dangerous, are actually life-giving and life-connecting. That may be a bit much, but...
No, it's all good.
I have a question. So, you know, we're always hearing that denial is you're not aware of your problem. A lot of the people I've worked with, the denial isn't so much about they have a problem. The denial is that they'll be able to be as happy without using their chemical or their lifestyle as they are now. And the feeling thing is they're very aware that they feel a lot better when they're high. How would you address those?
Yes, they had the illusion of having the sense of being connected. And people don't become addicted because it doesn't work. People become addicted because it does work. So really, the only thing that allows a person to leave addiction behind and attempt the life they're made to have is because pain, misery, consequences, and then the rare person is just angry. They're just tired of it. They're sick of it. They'll say, what do I need to do? So people don't get recovery because of a logic or common sense. In fact, even really consequences don't stop a person, but pain can awaken people. Consequences can awaken people and anger can awaken people. It's amazing. So it's like, you know, that's what we talk about. You have to become, you know, powerless before you can recognize your need for help. The people who do addiction, even when the alcohol or the drug, you know, no longer has its high effect, a person still uses it, even though it's not doing what it used to do, because they are that certain that there's no life behind addiction. And most people, before they become addicted, they tried to find life and can't. So it's like addiction is often an outcome. You're in denial before you get into addiction. You're already, quote, not living, unquote, before addiction finds you. So everybody I've ever treated, and I've got 30 years of treating, you know, people from Harvard and people from, you know, the ghetto. But every person I've treated who is addicted to drugs, alcohol, sex, power, control, was already in denial before they found relief through the pill. We'll just use that word, the pill. So these people were tragically already emotionally removed from how life could work before they ever found relief. So addiction, I mean, recovery, not only when a person sort of is put in a position of wanting to, having to get recovery, they wake up to there's more life than they've ever known, not just they're returning to the life they used to have.
Chip, great answer.
That's a great answer. This might be the other side of a coin, Chip. Earlier you had talked about how people will do anything not to feel. Is the other side of that coin, there are people that will do anything to feel, and they will pursue drugs and alcohol and pills at whatever price because they want to feel something. And George, I know you've mentioned before, George has been sober 35, 36 years, George? I'm losing count.
Something like that, yeah.
And you actually really loved the getting high.
I loved it.
I know you did.
Coke.
I know you did.
Yeah.
So there was a great feeling attached to that. So it wasn't like you were trying to run away from feelings. You were
adding to them.
You were trying to add to them.
Yeah.
And what I would say too is that when especially in the beginning when I was running, I started a treatment center called Center for Professional Excellence in '96, and we did that for 22 years. And one of the assignments we would give the newly recovering person during their process was grieving the loss of what had worked so beautifully. Mm. So there's a losing. And at the same time, it's like a person who's just trying to feel better or get higher, so to speak, they're also, I still contend, are in denial about how to live in a way that is fulfilling. And at the same time, addiction can create an ecstasy, and real life can create euphoria. And ecstasy is not a sustainable experience in this life, and it doesn't actually help other people. Our expertise needs to be able to live euphorically, and euphoria means to bear life well, to be good at struggle, and good at caring, and good at recognizing ourselves and others so we can serve and give and grow, you know, and complete things and affect life. And so, with George, when you let it go, you did have to grieve. And I would say, look at what you do with your life. And I would say on some level, on the long range euphoria pathway, 10 times better than it was.
You know, there were a couple things that happened, and the longer I'm alive and the longer I get to know the Lord better, I don't think people get sober without the Holy Spirit convicting them that it's wrong and that there's also a better way, even if they're not believers. I don't get how that works, but maybe it's general grace. But for me, one of the things that turned it was the physiological response to working out. I started running. And I would have 3 months of sobriety, and then I would go back and use, because my recovery was just boring, you know, working the steps and going to church and all that, and no fun. And then I started running, and I got kind of this feeling. And so there's a physiological piece to my recovery. But I go to John 10:10, that the thief came to kill, murder, and destroy, but the Son of Man came to give us life abundantly. That's why I used in the first place, right? And you can only find that sustainable with Christ. And I'll go to my grave saying that because it's true.
I love hearing that. And addiction, and you said it beautifully, addiction's an attempt to find what we're created to have without having to pay the price of feeling fully, of being in the struggle, of depending on Jesus that much, of depending on God, of asking for help. Of being, you know, surrendering to how we're created to wired for relationship. And, you know, like running and taking care of yourself. In fact, we've had 2 or 3 marathoners come out of our treatment.
Love it. I love that.
Yeah, one guy was a businessman from Norway, and he became a very successful marathoner post-treatment. He sends us pictures occasionally. But, you know, taking care of yourself, you know, living how God created you to not just to enjoy his creation and celebrate what he's done for us. I mean, you know, life in the Holy Spirit is life to the full. And the deceiver comes to destroy and kill, which means to take us away from how we're created, who we're created to be with, whose we're created to be, and what we're made to do. You know, live fully. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. Chip, I have a question for you. I'd like you to answer it after the break, but I want to get back to this idea of lamenting, how you have to lament things that you've lost. And I'm curious, if you were living a sinful lifestyle, do you have to lament sin? So that's the question. Yeah. We'll take a little break. Chip Dodd is our guest. His book is Hope in the Age of Addiction, How to Find Freedom and Restore Your Relationships. Of course, you're listening to Real Recovery. We'll be right back.
Try to see things my way. Do I have to keep on talking till I can go on? Why you see it your way? On the risk of knowing that our love may soon be gone.
All right, we are back with our guest, our special guest tonight, Chip Dodd. Co-authored the book Hope in the Age of Addiction with Stephen James, How to Find Freedom and Restore Your Relationships. Right before we went to break, Chip, I threw out the idea of lamenting. And if you have had a past lifestyle that you once enjoyed that you now have to let go, and you talk about lamenting, can you lament a sinful lifestyle, or is there room in God's economy to even do that?
Yes, that question. I just love your questions. They're rich and deep, and would take us a lot more time than what we have here. But it's an imperative to lament, and three things I'd like to say about that. Number one is that the full life of living on this earth is living between 1 and 10, not between 5 and 5, but between 1 and 10, and that requires that we be able to grieve deeply, losing what matters to us, and celebrate completely the fulfillment of what matters to us. So we're made to live between 1 and 10, between grief and celebration. So we're literally created to be able to grieve. In fact, I wrote a book called Needs of the Heart, and one of the needs that we have is grief, because life is more full of loss than anything. But when it comes to addiction, when we get into recovery and we grieve the loss of the thing that made us feel good, because it is giving up something that did work until it quit. So there's a grief there and a sadness that comes with it. And then there's a need to find something else. And so that's one grief process. The second thing is that addiction is a sickness, not a sin. Now, what is the sin, though? And I contend that the sin is what makes us sick. And the sin of addiction is not the addiction itself. The sin is this thing within us that we gather up somewhere in our mid-teens, 20s, when we vow to not be vulnerable. We vow to not get hurt again. We make a vow that willpower will take the place of how God created us. And so when we get into recovery, in the steps of the 12 steps and also the 8 Beatitudes, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. It's like when we wake up to what God is doing for us, we go, oh, my goodness, look at what I've wasted. So when we look back at our lives and we start seeing what our willpower and our self-sufficiency and our independence from neediness has cost us and others, then the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous allow us to look at ourselves as people who have failed. And we do a moral inventory and then seek forgiveness. And then we make amends to people. We make amends with, I'm sorry, I ask your forgiveness. I wish I hadn't, and this happened. So that's the three things. Number one is that we're made to be able to grieve and celebrate. If you can't grieve fully, you won't celebrate fully. Number two is that we do have to seek forgiveness and lament how the vow against our own neediness has cost us and others. Because we isolate ourselves from life. It's Jeremiah 17, 5 and 6. Isolated, cursed is the person who depends upon their own strength, who trusts in their own flesh, whose heart has removed from God. He said they'll be like a bush in the wasteland. Even when prosperity comes, they won't see it. Even when community and love comes, they won't see it. So we have to literally grieve the wasted heart. And then three, we have to make amends, which means to seek forgiveness. And our sorrow brings us to the willingness to do that. So I think lamentation, grief, is imperative to be set free, and especially the grief that comes with prompting us to seek forgiveness that really does set us free. Forgiveness is freedom, and it allows us to live again in the grace we've been given, which almost in many ways makes every day a day of gratitude, because we remember where we came from. I remember John Newton, the legend is that he knew grace by seeing the 20,000, the guy that wrote Amazing Grace, by remembering, not getting sunk in, but remembering the 20,000 faces, the slaves that he had shipped on his boat, I think his first mate or something. But he said that always reminded him of grace. So his gratitude came from the sorrow that he no longer lives in. So, yes, we need to grieve. That's a long answer, but
It's a great answer. I always tell my guys that if you like who you are and what you do when you're using, you got more using to do. But the hard part for me in my recovery, the hardest part, was learning how to celebrate without using. And what I've come to think, and I'd like your input on this, because I'm always trying to, you know, make my recovery better and more Christ-like. I think it starts when God's creation isn't good enough for me, and I fantasize about how to make it better, and that puts me ahead of God in that I know more than he does, right? And I'm starting to, you know, you learn how to celebrate the little things, like waking up without a hangover and a nice cup of coffee and your Bible. I don't know if I'd ever read my Bible if I didn't drink coffee. That's another addiction. But, you know, you got to keep it workable. And yeah. The little things like walking with your dog when the stars are out. That's, you know, enjoying God. It's a worship thing, isn't it?
Yes, very much so. And, you know, the first two books of the Bible are magnificent. I mean, we're in Eden. The last two books, we've gone home. But everything in between is struggle. There's a contending that has to happen. And I always think of it like the earth is the Lord's and the world is the prince of, is owned by the prince of darkness. So we have to be able to live in struggle. And struggle is the ability to, you know, to contend with our lives emotionally, spiritually, and relationally, and stay connected to God and others. And the world is always trying to pull us away from that because of pain, and God is always drawing us to it because of his creation and how he created us. So you said so beautifully that, you know, that gratitude is actually precedes the miracle. And by you being willing to say, okay, life's not going to fix me, but there's a great deal of God in this life. And so you start to look around and go, you know, this coffee smells good. And the senses, you come back to your senses. And also you come back to I hunger for life and on an emotional connected level. And like coffee and my Bible, I connect with God. And then suddenly you've got this gratitude that sustains you for the next hours. And then you're walking along and you wish to smile at someone and you smile at someone and they smile back at you. And something happens in your brain as a sense of encouragement and promise in life. And before you know it, it's sundown. And then you're on your knees saying your prayers that night. And you say, God, I've got a very short inventory tonight. It's just it's thank you. And I'll see you in the morning, you know. And every bit of that happened through little things. And those little things, because you were watching. You were seeing with the eyes of your heart, literally.
I love that. I pray for the power, strength, and desire to stay sober before I get out of bed every day. No, really, because I never thought I'd get sober. And I've read many times that God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. But in my case, God did for me what I didn't want to do for myself. And I always encourage my guys to pray for the desire to change. Where are you on that?
100% agree. In the treatment, you know, we've been able to fortunately just get to very anonymously, quietly affect thousands and thousands of lives through this treatment, which is about using, like, we start with God created us this way. But what's amazing is that not one person came to our treatment voluntarily. Not one person came to our treatment in 20 years with a desire to quit. So, and that is the beauty. It's like, you don't have to have desire to quit. But reality is, are you willing to take a look at finding a want to? And it starts with that, give me the desire. And, So I think it's a very important prayer. And I don't know anyone who truly can admit and say that they wish to quit at first.
Oh, no. The first treatment I went to, I thought they were going to teach me how to use without getting into trouble. Like if you get pulled over, how to, touch your nose without, And when they said they wanted me to quit using, I thought it was fraudulent. there you'd have a business. But I think God works on you, as you say, to get you there. He draws you, maybe a DWI or something.
Yeah. And every single person that I've known somewhere, I've always kind of historically sort of checked in, like, where were you praying? Because somebody was praying for you, or you were praying for you because somewhere you were tired, and the Holy Spirit is moving on people who seem to have no connection to God, right?
Yes. Yeah.
It's miraculous.
I was telling Bill before the show, a friend of mine who was with Campus Crusade 35 years ago hounded me at church. I kept relapsing, and he just stuck with me. And he called me last night. I hadn't talked to him in a while. And I said, you helped save my life. And the guys had a huge importance to me in my walk and recovery. But we always say in our program, God doesn't save us from our addiction without having a job for us to do. And the great thing is you get to do like you're doing. That's something that's really important for the kingdom. And a lot of us had really messed up. And the miracle is God takes dead people like me, makes me alive again, and then goes, I got a job for you. It doesn't get better than that for me.
And that is so beautiful. And that's right out of the New Testament. I mean, the sinful woman in Luke 7, I mean, she, the worst of us, I like to say, get the best of God. Mm. And meaning that I've got nowhere to go. So God, if you're not in it, I'm done. So what I love is that, people who get into recovery, quite the opposite of their lives ending, their lives are starting. And I would rather go to a recovering physician than one who isn't in recovery, because they get what it is to be human. They get what it is to care. They also get what it is to be competent. They also have a purpose in life. They also tend to have integrity. I mean, those who really get, true conversion recovery, true God-oriented recovery. It's amazing. And we wind up having something to do that matters more than pain.
Chip, this has been delightful.
Yes.
This has gone so quickly. I cannot believe our time is up.
My goodness.
Yeah, we're already out of time, believe it or not. But you have given us so much to think about and so much wisdom, and I can see your 30 years in the business has really produced some dynamic thinking, and you've put it all in your book, Hope in the Age of Addiction, How to Find Freedom and Restore Your Relationship. Chip Dodd has been our guest. Chip, thank you so much for doing the show.
Thanks, Chip.
Bill,
you were great.
Bill, George. Both of you, thank you so much. If anybody wants more information from me, it's chipdodd.com. And I also always recommend the bookend related to Hope in the Age of Addiction is the book called The Voice of the Heart, which kind of introduces us to feelings.
Terrific.
So Bill and George, thank you so much. I think I've got it right. Bill and George,
yeah,
right?
You do indeed. Yeah.
Thank you. It was great.
Way to go. That wraps up our show for the night. Thank you so much for listening to Real Recovery. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.